The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And this is probably between here or the National Club, the classiest place I've ever done an interview. I'm at the Fine Wine Reserve around King and Spadinish area. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to give the exact location. So it's either east or west of Spadina, maybe a little bit north or south of King. And I am joined by Maddie Legault. Maddie, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I appreciate
it. Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So before I want to get into what you do with, and now it's I always mispronounce, it's just Pernod Ricard, right?
Pernod Ricard.
Yeah, yep. Pernod Ricard. Mm-hmm. This place, Fine Wine Reserve, when you said, would you like to do the interview here? I'm like, fantastic. This is one of the coolest places to have a glass of wine, isn't it?
It definitely is. I feel super lucky to have access to it. I always like to kind of invite friends or co-workers and say, okay, we're going to go to a very exclusive underground cellar. It's not advertised anywhere. So
yeah.
It's definitely a perfect place for us to have a chat as well.
And it does feel very secretive. Like it's just off the street. There's no signage anywhere. Like most of the people walking would have no idea. There's millions of dollars of wine here. And the security is crazy tight as well.
Yeah, I know. I do love that. It is very unassuming. So it's definitely a lot of fun. In the winter months or summer months, I want to get away. It's a perfect escape.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk just about how you got into wine, your own journey into it. You were nice enough. You have two bottles for us to try, which is fantastic. But first, for the listeners, because this podcast, it's for hardcore wine people, but it's also for people getting into it. What does it mean to be a wine ambassador for Pernod Ricard?
I think it's an incredible role that I'm really proud to have and be a part of. What it means, I think, is sharing your love and passion for our Pernod Ricard wines, which includes Jacob's Creek, Stone Lee, Campo Viejo, and Kenwood.
Mm-hmm. And when did you have a moment where you knew you wanted to get into wine? Because I did the research and just, you know, you graduated from the Queensland University of Technology. You spent time in Belgium. You completed a semester doing a Bachelor of Architecture. So you have a wide range. So I'm seeing technology. I'm seeing architecture. I think you did a lot of stuff in languages. How did that lead you into wine?
Yes, I think it was a slow progression and an accumulation of things. I grew up in Brisbane, Australia. Mm-hmm. So that isn't a very well-known or established wine region. But my parents come from South Australia.
Yeah.
So they... South Australia, as you would know, is an incredible wine region. They lived in the Adelaide Hills and have very strong ties still to the Adelaide Hills and to South Australia. So whilst I grew up in Brisbane, we every Easter, every Christmas would go down to visit our family, our friends, and that would always be coupled with wine tasting. Even from a young age, I wasn't wine tasting, but I was exposed to the wine industry in that sense.
Yeah.
Exposed to, wine, having a little sip here and there, trying to understand it. And to be honest, it didn't really click until I was in Belgium. So I graduated from school and I wanted to learn more about French and really perfect my French. So I did a year in Belgium speaking French, did my architecture. I was kind of playing in that field in the artistic space. But during my time there, it was my grandma's 80th and she came over from South Australia, from Adelaide. And we thought we'd have a fun trip to Paris.
Mm-hmm. And that is fun.
Super fun. Yeah. So I was really excited. It was my first time in Paris. And we thought to celebrate for her 80th. I hadn't seen her in months. And it was my first really big trip away that we'd get like a special bottle of wine. And to be honest, I cannot tell you what type of wine it was.
No,
I can't tell
no.
you the label.
Because you know that's the follow-up question.
Yeah, I know. But it was the first time we opened that bottle. So we landed in Paris. Like I was amazed. It was like the Eiffel Tower, cobblestone streets, lugging our bags up these cobblestone, windy streets. And we thought we'd get like just a really easy meal, got a roast chicken from the side of the road and a special bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And we opened it, and that was... It was probably the first time I really was like, wow, like this is something, to me, it sounds so cliche, but it tasted like liquid gold.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe like wine could taste like that, because before that moment, wine just tasted like wine. It was white wine or red wine. It was just a winey taste.
Yeah.
And then that just got me really curious. And then throughout my studies, doing marketing, I kind of just, you know, socially with friends would get more into wine. And then I saw this job to be a Pernod Ricard wine ambassador and thought it was just incredible. Have the opportunity to travel to all these different wine regions, get incredible exposure to winemakers, the wineries, the wine regions. It was incredible just to learn so much and then to go to an emerging wine market. So
Let's go back to that bottle of wine and the roast chicken. So yes. That was in Paris. It was you and your grandmother.
My grandmother, yes.
And it's just the two of you.
Yes.
In Paris,
yep.
Celebrating like around her 80th birthday.
Yes.
First off, that's a fantastic story. I love that story.
yeah.
That is your classic great story about a great wine origin story of how you fell into it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, I think, why you would have... why that wine A would have tasted so good. I mean, it probably was a really good bottle.
Yeah.
But B was the moment. I mean, you're in Paris for the first time. You're doing this unique thing, traveling with your grandmother, and there you guys are. And I think it's part of sometimes what makes wine great. It's not just the wine or the winemakers, the grape and the terroir. It is the moment. And it's
definitely.
One thing great about wine is that usually if you have a nice bottle, there's usually something nice going on around you versus, you know, Bud Light is sometimes just a Tuesday thing.
Yeah, yeah. I almost didn't want to kind of follow up and know what that bottle was because I didn't want to taste it again and ruin the moment. Maybe it wouldn't taste as good. But
it wouldn't have.
Yeah.
It might have been close.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have been as good. It's like people talk about how they're on their honeymoon.
Yeah.
And they're in South Africa.
Yeah.
And there they are, the Stellenbosch Mountain, and they're trying some Chenin Blanc, and it's just the most magical thing.
Yeah.
And then they find a case of it. They ship it home. They have it 3 months later. It's cold outside. They pour a glass and like, this isn't as good as it was then. Like that is something that exists.
Definitely. There's actually been studies done that find it's the environment you're in. It's the sights, the smells, the sounds that can really impact how wine tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And we play a lot with that with our wine brands, especially Campo Viejo and some fun activations we do.
Yeah. Mm. And we'll get into that. I just want to bounce around a little bit with you.
Yeah.
I know that by just my research, hey, stop looking at my notes. And by the way, I'm now going to totally rat you out like this, but shows you how prepared you are. On your laptop, it says interview prep right at the top. Now, was that for this or was that for something else?
It was for this. Mm-hmm. And
I'm not going to read it. I just see in big font at the top, interview prep.
So as a part of our training, we did media prep, and probably the number one thing was if you're having a one-to-one interview, don't bring notes or don't show your notes.
Yeah.
And so I've broken that rule immediately. I just thought if you had your notes up, that was a go-to for me as well.
Yeah, but mine is to go through all the questions and stuff.
Fair enough.
Your notes should already be in your head.
I know. They are in my head.
Okay, now I'm going down a different road, and you don't have to answer this.
Okay.
But just working for a company, every company, they have their messaging, they've got, you know, their hierarchy, they got just how they want their message to get out there. Did they tell you anything, any do's or don'ts for this interview?
Oh, I mean, I don't think particularly for this interview, but I think overall, the overarching rule is just to really show like your passion and love and storytelling for the brands.
Yeah.
Because if you have stats and you have a whole bunch of very dry quotes that I probably have here, it's not.
I bet you do.
Yeah. If people won't really remember that, it's a storytelling. So you want to make, I guess, it about, you can include yourself in that story, but yeah, always tell a story with the brands.
Yeah. It's true. When you look at staff training at restaurants, the main thing they want is, you know, for the staff is, I always think the best thing is have one or two stories, have some bullet points. You don't need to tell them just what the pH level is, what the acid, you know, they don't need to know exactly what the vintage was like, how old the vines were.
It's, yeah.
Who made the wine? Tell me the story about it. Like, if you could remember the wine you had with your grandmother,
yeah,
you could sell cases of that wine.
Yeah, I wish I could. Maybe I should follow up and see what it is.
So let's, if you want, I'd love to try just as, what's the white wine that we're going to be trying?
So I have here our Stoneley Latitude. This is from New Zealand.
Do you want me to pour it as you're talking about it?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. It's a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, no. Here, you hold the mic and talk. I can pour if you want.
Oh, okay, amazing.
Yeah, so you tell the listeners about Stoneley Latitude, and
yes.
I'll pour a small bit.
I really wanted to show you this one. I'm very curious if maybe you've heard of it, but Stoneley is, I think, a really iconic New Zealand winery. It lies in Marlborough, which is a famous wine-growing region within New Zealand. And this is our Stoneley Latitude, which was only recently released in May. So really big feat for us because previous to that, we only had our Sauvignon Blanc and our Pinot Noir. And our Latitude is almost the more kind of step-up premium version. And this, the difference that lies with this is it's sourced from a smaller sub-region within Marlborough where there's a more concentrated stones. So Stoneley, as you can guess from the name, is grown amongst stony soils, and it gives it more tropical fruit flavors because the sun is shining down all day on those stones and heats up the vines.
By the way, so shameful of me. As I was pouring, there was a, like, I did not do a proper pour. There was a tiny spill as I was trying to pour, just shameful. So
yeah,
good job filling, because I went just to get I went to get just one little paper towel. I hate it. There was just a little bit of a dribble, but
yeah,
that was enough. I'm like, oh, you dummy.
That's all right. I just kept talking. I was like, all right, keep talking.
Well, that's your job.
That's right.
Yeah, I wasn't worried about it. So I've had Stoneley, and I've certainly had plenty of Sauvignon Blanc from the Marlborough area. I haven't as much like sort of single vineyard sort of stuff, so sort of the higher end beyond some of the higher end Cloudy Bay stuff I've had before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, whilst this isn't single vineyard, it's sourced from a very small area. It's maybe a kilometer squared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's it comes from Rapara, which is close by to the Cloudy Bay tasting room. But it's we call it the Golden Mile, so the most awarded area and region where the best grapes come from.
It's a little bit lighter. Like, it still has the green, you know, the green fruit, the little bit of papaya, the grassy notes, a lot of the classic Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, but it's not as attacky. Sometimes find, it's okay. Like the sort of entry level ones can be a little bit more attack on the nose, which can be great for people that are new into wine where they just want full body all over the place. So this one has got a little bit more subtlety on the nose on this one.
Definitely. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. A little more, I get more orange.
Mm-hmm.
The tropical's there, but I get very orange rind, orange peel. A lot of orangey notes on it as well.
Yeah.
So a little more stone fruit on the palate than I got on the nose on this fella.
Definitely. I like to say it's stone fruit in a bottle.
Yeah, and that's a good way to sell it. The remarkable thing about New Zealand is there is so much New Zealand wine in North America, but the population of New Zealand is tiny.
It is.
And it's in the furthest corner of planet Earth, yet their wines are everywhere. It really is like just I don't want to go a miracle, but it is a hell of an accomplishment.
No, I definitely agree. Whilst Australia has 65 kind of GI regions, New Zealand has 10.
Yeah.
So there's not, it's a tiny country, and we like to say it's on the edge of the earth, but it's a super clean, green, beautiful place. And it's really interesting. I love that it is booming here because I think it's well deserved.
Yeah.
And especially in Canada, it's really shown Canadians love their New Zealand wine, and especially Stoneley.
Yeah. No, this is How long have they been part of your guys' portfolio?
So that is a good question.
No, it's a good. No, sometimes I say it's good questions because you're not sure off the top of your head, and then it's not bad.
No, that's okay. I believe it was after 2000 that we acquired Stoneleigh. So it's maybe 10, 20 years that we've had it in the portfolio. The longest wine we've had in the portfolio would be Jacob's Creek.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get there. I want to get into a lot of talk about Australian wine.
Yes, so much to talk about.
Were you nervous when you hosted your first event? If I Google your name, it doesn't take long to find you hosting wine events, you know, to show off, you know, your guys' portfolio from Spain, from New Zealand, from Australia. Were you nervous the first time you did a solo one?
Definitely. I think you're always going to be have a little bit of nerves.
Because you do these like 2 hour, you know, sometimes with a chef with food. So pairing your guys' portfolio of food.
That's right.
And I mean, yeah, how was your first one?
So, to be honest, my first one didn't feel like almost my first big one because what was great and we can go into later is the 6 months training we did. Almost every week we had to present our wines with a presentation in a more formal setting. So it got me a lot more comfortable talking about wine. Some of my bigger presentations, I definitely have been nervous. One that I really loved, it almost wasn't a presentation. I was a part of a panel at the Drake. They have these monthly parties.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we had an International Women's Day party that Campo Viejo was a part of and sponsored. And
are there winemakers? Is it fully women that
all female winemaking team, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So that tied in really well, and I was like Campo by the glass at the party. There was over 200 people there, and I was asked to be a part of a panel for women and wine, and so I wasn't really given too much of a heads up. So I was asked, I guess, a lot of in depth questions about feminism and wine, and I guess that got me a little off guard. But I think overall, it's right. As you said, it's all in my head. So I think I just have to trust myself. And so, every time sometimes I'm like, look, this is easy breezy. At the end of the day, I just think people just want to drink the wine.
They do. And it's always funny, like, because I'll do private wine events as well.
Yeah.
And the first thing I'll always ask, how much do you want to learn?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, if you want to learn a ton, if you're all geeked out, great.
Yeah.
If you just want to know a little bit, we're just here to drink and have fun. Fantastic.
Definitely.
You know, like I remember I did, you know, for some parties where they were hardcore in the wine. Yeah. I would bring a map.
Yeah.
I did like wines of Italy. I'm like, okay, this is where this wine is specifically from.
Yeah.
I've also done a bachelorette.
Okay.
Where after about 10 minutes, I realized my job was to make sure glasses were never empty.
Definitely.
And if someone wanted a fact, I'm here. Otherwise, you guys go have fun. You guys get caught up. I'm fine with it. So I mean, which just sort of leads to the point, doing these events, it's so much just about reading the room.
Completely. And that's what I was about to say is every event is different. Especially the types of events I hold and the format is different. But even when I say do the same format, I did one where it was for some Yelp elites and it was on a Monday and Tuesday night. And the Monday night, they were going wild. They just loved it. They just wanted to learn more. Mm-hmm. And then the Tuesday night, they were a lot more reserved and we kind of had to go around the room and introduce ourselves. And it was very interesting to see exactly the same format, but just such a different audience. You need to read the room.
The wine we're drinking, because again, I like to bounce around. What's the, because when people listen, they always want to know, what's the price point? You know, for this one, really good acid.
Yes.
On this. And like, I feel that this is a good for when, you know, when you want to step up.
Definitely.
Because it is more subtle, but there is more mineral. There is just a nice, as you said, there's a nice stone fruit finish here. And, you know, you can tell that, you know, this is a good quality Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc, and sometimes they can all taste, a lot of them can taste very much the same. They can be ubiquitous. It's not their fault. It's just, you know, when you're doing very large volume, there's going to be some sacrifices. And if you want to drink a wine for under $20 that's being shipped from the other end of the earth, I'm sorry, you're not going to get the highest quality for under $20. It's just life. You know, jet fuel ain't cheap. So what's the price point for this?
So this is $21.95. So it's in the vintages section. I think it's a steal for the quality grapes that we're using from, as I said, a very small area of Marlborough. It's not sourcing across Marlborough. It's a very, very small area with the highest quality grapes. So
that is good value.
Yeah, it makes my job easy.
Yeah, I had that pin for just north of like 20. I was going like $25.95, $26. So,
yeah.
That is a good quality Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
Definitely.
Yeah, nice work. And also, I traveled. I was in the North Island a couple of years ago.
Amazing.
And I knew the Syrahs would be good because, you know, did Hawke's Bay and did the whole area. But the Bordeaux blends, Waiheke Island stunned me with the quality of their Merlot, Cab.
Yeah.
You know, their Bordeaux blends. I was expecting something a little more novelty because it's a tourist island.
Yeah.
You know, just off of Auckland. And I was stunned. Like, this is really, this is like as high-end stuff as you're going to find anywhere in the world. So yeah. I was definitely stunned by North Island Bordeaux blends and even their Chardonnays.
Yeah.
You know, just some really killer Chardonnays as well.
I'm amazed with New Zealand, their wines, their landscape, everything. Yeah. I don't think I could keep my mouth closed when I was in Marlborough. It was just so stunning.
Yeah.
South
Island is I want to do Australia and South Island.
Yeah.
So I want to go to Australia.
Yes.
I've had a love-hate with Australian red wine.
Okay.
I love the whites.
Yes.
Clara Eden Valley Rieslings are killer.
Yeah.
I mean, these are killer wines.
Definitely.
You know, the Chardonnays from Margaret River, I love.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I've always had is a lot of the Barossa and all that area, and it's not about the wines are bad. It's just not as much for me. Very fruit, mint, eucalyptus.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work as well for my palate, but I still always like to try. But, and also I'm the Tasmanian. I think their pinots are killer.
Yes. I love Tasmanian pinots. Yeah.
Tasmanian, you don't get much here because it's killer.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is sometimes when you get in a wine, you look down at Yellowtail or Wolf Blass or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But these wines are also really important.
Yeah.
Because they are correctly made. And they're sort of a great way to get people into the world of wine. I was just wondering your thoughts.
Definitely. I think whilst the larger companies maybe could be looked down upon, I see it as they've led the way and shown the world what Australian wine is.
Mm-hmm.
Barossa Valley is naturally, it's a really hot climate. So in summer, it's almost like 40 degrees. It's swelteringly hot. And as a result, you are going to get really big, juicy, kind of black fruit flavors come through. The eucalyptus is really interesting and I love to talk about because there's some wineries in South Australia along the limestone coast and there's a lot of eucalyptus trees planted there. And so when people do mention that, I just love the fact that like grapes kind of do breathe and they breathe in those oils from the trees around them. And I just think that's amazing that you can.
It is cool.
Yeah.
That's terroir.
Yeah. And so for me, again, it sounds cliche, but it really is a taste of home. Like there's no eucalyptus trees here in Toronto or Canada. And so like I can open up a bottle of Shiraz and I can taste home. I can taste the eucalyptus and those big like fruity flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's almost what I became accustomed to when I really did get into wine is those bigger flavors and the styles that come out of the Barossa or those emerging wine regions in Australia.
And I mean, I guess I feel the same way, even though I'm not from Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good that I can tell the classic Prince Edward County Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
And it's not for everyone. It's a little bit of this like tint. It's like the cherry's there, but there's this light metallic-y sort of thing going on. It's a note I always get with it. But yeah, I think like people in the wine industry, I understand why we don't drink a lot of Yellowtail.
Mm-hmm.
However, all of us came from somewhere.
Yeah.
All of us came from like, I thought Merlot meant Italian wine at one point.
Yeah.
I'm a dummy. And this is not me putting down those sorts of wines. It's more like, these are wines for people that are getting into it.
Yeah.
These are wines for if you like a big full-bodied wine. Like there is an absolute place for it. And I think these wines are important because once you start enjoying those, now the door is open and you go to other places. Which isn't to say you won't go back to the Yellowtails.
Yeah.
But it's sort of your entry level to wine.
Yeah. I don't think Australian wine should be put in a category of just like big and oaky and big.
Yeah.
Like as big oaky.
And that's sort of what like sort of, I'd love for you to expand on that because
yeah.
I think that is a stereotype that is out there. I'd love for you to sort of expand on that.
Yeah, well, during my time there as a part of training as an ambassador, we spent about a month in the Barossa Valley and got to see as well all the regions really around South Australia, which is incredible. So a part of that training, learning to represent Jacobs Creek, was we went out to Eden Valley, and which is where, as you said, there's some great Rieslings that come out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's amazing that when you drive up, because it's a very hilly area, the Barossa Valley, there's lots of beautiful rolling hills, is when you drive up one of those hills, every 100 meters in elevation is a 1 degree difference in temperature. And so at the top of those hills, for example, we have this great Eden Valley Riesling, and that's where one of our winemakers made the first Riesling, Colin Gramp. And I think it's the coolest story because we're up there and it's this really stony soils, and our founder from Jacobs Creek, Johann Gramp, his great grandson, saw the potential of up on the top of this hill to make a Riesling vineyard.
By the way, that's gutsy.
Yeah.
Because when you decide to make it, you're also making an economic decision.
Yeah.
And he said it was his grandson or his grandfather?
Great. So our founder's great-grandson. Yeah. So at that stage, he was running the winery in the 50s. And I saw the incredible potential of on top of this hill. And at the time, it was mainly fortified wines being made.
Yeah.
So he was and he has very strong German roots, Colin Gramp. So.
Okay, see, that snaps it all in focus.
It does.
That puts it all in focus.
So he's like, hey, we need to let Australia taste some Riesling. Mm-hmm. So we went to the top of this hill. It was just this really hard shift rock, really hard to dig into. So he's like, all right, we're going to make this happen. He plants some dynamite along this hill, blows up the side of the hill pretty much, and plants these Riesling vineyards and, you know, puts the rock back on top. And still to this day, that vineyard lies there and produces, I think, some of the best Riesling out of the area.
Oh my God, I want to try a bottle of that.
Yeah, I know, it's not here in Canada. No. But I think... Yeah, Australia definitely shouldn't be put into like a little tidy box. There's definitely so much variety, and there's so many different flavors coming out of all the different regions. At Jacobs Creek, we like to say we have a wine for every occasion, because mm-hmm. there's sparklings, there's like more crisp white light whites, or like heavier reds. So I definitely love the versatility coming out of Australia. I definitely think there's something for everyone.
Yeah, and much like, you know, if you're in Canada and someone goes, oh, Canada, you guys do the ice wine.
Yeah.
And then all the Canadian wine lovers like, no, how dare you? Have you tried our Cab Franc and this and that?
Yeah.
Have you been to Okanagan Valley? Or, you know, have you tried the sparkling from Nova Scotia? And then we all get up in arms about it. So, yeah, it's the exact same way with Australia as well. It's kind of why I want to go to Australia, because I want to find the Barossa reds that I'm gonna love.
Yeah.
I got plenty of whites. I got some Pinot. I got obviously some of the sweet stuff and things like that, and, you know, Margaret River. But yeah, for me, it's incomplete. Like, if I look at my wine sort of palette, Australia is definitely, that's a bit of a blank spot or just a low spot for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd love to hear more about your travels, because you traveled, not just in Australia, but in Spain, California, New Zealand, just some of your favorite moments traveling with Ricard.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, leading up into this job, I was interested in wine, but didn't know a lot about it. And then I saw the posting to be a wine ambassador. And it was literally like, do you want to travel the world? Do you want to, you know, taste wine and share your passion of it? And at first I was like, oh God, I don't know nearly anything about wine. And when I was accepted into the program, we would spend a month in the Barossa Valley and around South Australia, a week in Marlborough, a week in Spain. And I ended up spending almost 2 months in California. Mm-hmm. So it gave me a really good understanding of different wine regions across the globe. It's hard to pick down and pick my favorite moments, because I think every wine region has its own charm. Spending time in Jacobs Creek, I think, was really definitely special, because I grew up, and Jacobs Creek is such a big brand in Australia as well as here. So it's such an iconic brand, and it was really interesting to see kind of how it works and what kind of puts all the cogs into motion. And really the amount of care, and whilst it is a larger winery, they still treat it almost like a boutique winery. Every vineyard, there is a lot of care taken into it. Sourcing a vineyard there, like looking at the soil type every 1 meter, and the incredible amount of technology they're using as well was really impressive to make sure the grapes are watered the correct amount and everything there. So that was really fun.
Was it intimidating when you first were there, like your first couple, because as you said, you didn't know, like, this is, obviously you had a passion for this and learning and doing something different and travel and wine.
Yeah.
But getting into the nitty gritty of it, were you just excited about it? Was there any sort of intimidation going in?
I think naturally there is. Wine can be a very pretentious topic. And in my job, I really try and make it as approachable as possible. But yeah, there were definitely moments. It was pretty much 1 week into the job. I kind of got a feel of the Sydney office. And then we were straight into, it was vintage at Jacobs Creek. And there was this moment where we all went into the tasting room where they were doing ferment tastings. Mm-hmm. And so they had lined up, I can't even tell you how many bottles, those little water bottles filled with the juice that was in fermentation.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what was going on. It was just all the head winemakers of Jacobs Creek, who like are very well respected, were in there. We didn't really have a chance to say hello because they were busy working. And the rate that they were tasting wines and could say, okay, the Brix on this is this, the acidity is this, and they could just kind of forecast what that wine would look like. And there was dozens and dozens of wine. So that was incredible to kind of taste it, spit it out, taste it, spit it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a really kind of very incredible, inspiring moment. Maybe a little intimidating, but for me, it kind of made me want to learn more.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Because once you sort of get a taste for it, and just like the difference between hanging out, in Australia, New Zealand versus California.
Yeah.
Spain, which some of the wineries there feel much more rural versus like California, where everything is a little bit more modern. I mean, there's such contrast.
Definitely. I think, after we went to the Barossa Valley, seeing Marlborough, I think, was really special, because as I've lived in Brisbane, it is, New Zealand's quite close, and I've been there on holiday skiing, and I think it's just such a beautiful country. But seeing Marlborough was just absolutely next level. I think I just thought it was incredible, like beautiful, beautiful landscape. How learning about Stone Lee and how they make the wine as well was really impressed by. For a winery that, as you've said, is a larger winery, and it is here in Canada, that's quite well known. They use sustainable practices still. We were walking through the vineyard and they use sheep to kind of eat up all the weeds and kind of poop out as fertilizer. So yeah.
Featherstone Winery in Niagara does the same thing.
Oh, I'll have to go visit.
Yeah. They're Riesling, Black Sheep Riesling, same thing. They use the animals for pruning.
Yeah, I love that, because we were just driving. It was amazing. We were driving through the vineyard and all these sheep were kind of like barring and like scampering off. So it was.
That is so New Zealand.
It is.
But part of it is because they have to. I mean, same thing in Australia, I mean, to an extent. But because you're on your own, you're an island, it's harder to ship in more manpower or things like that. Like, you've got to rely on just what you have around you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is the key as to how Australia's become so innovative in the wine world, is because it's such big spaces. We've had to really think hard about how we're going to get the best quality grapes and pick it, and as opposed to smaller wine regions where you have a lot more people to do the handiwork. But New Zealand, they were all such special places. It's really like asking to pick your favorite child. Mm-hmm. But
see, I work in the world of sports, so I have to rank. I will always. The rankings can change all the time.
Yeah.
They can change all the time. But I always do. I'm not going to ask you to choose your favorites of your portfolio.
Yeah.
I imagine that's something they would probably frown upon.
We're not told anything yes or no, but I genuinely, I love our Jacobs Creek Shiraz. As I said, it's really a taste of home for me, and it's the type of style of wine that I grew up really to love. And as a taste of home on a cold winter's day, it's like a big warm hug from home.
Yeah, and we'll try in a second to appreciate. I poured you too much.
I poured you. I'm way sorry, too much. I have not had a chance to drink enough.
You don't. Oh no, you don't have to. But yeah. And just last thought, this is that Stoneleigh Latitude Sauvignon Blanc, $21.95. That's excellent. Mm-hmm. You know. By the way, I do not work for Riccardo. I'm not getting any kickback for this. But yeah, this is a a really good Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. How long have you been in Canada?
So I've been in Canada for just over a year now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was an interesting how I came here because, as I said, when I applied for this role, I knew there was going to be this incredible experience to travel to our different brand homes. But it was a complete lotto. Like, I did not know where I would be going in the world.
Really?
Yeah. So interesting,
okay, this
isn't
is interesting,
it?
Yeah.
So I knew it was 2 years, and yeah. I knew that it would be incredible. Everyone said it was incredible, but I was like, but why? Like, and then I discovered we'd be traveling so much. But yeah, when I got through to the final, I applied. And as you saw, I had my cringeworthy video of why I wanted to apply. So,
by the way, you can find it if you Google Madeline's name. Don't do Maddie. Do Madeline Legault. You'll find it.
Yeah. So to apply for the program, you need to do a 3-minute video on yourself, mm-hmm. Talking about why you want the role. And yep. So I got through to stage and was at the Sydney office for the interviews. And I didn't know where I was going to be going. I knew a girl that had got it to the previous year to me, and she was in the Sydney office. So I was like, okay, yeah. Am I going to Sydney? I don't know. I know this is international. And then it came down to it, and they're like, all right, so you're going to an emerging wine region or market. So far we're looking at India, Dubai, or Toronto.
That's some range.
It's a big range. And I didn't really it was really where I was needed. And I think that's a part of the program. You need to be flexible.
Yeah.
So I kind of went home back to Brisbane and I was like, am I going to be living in India? Like I'd swap every day. I'd be like, okay, I can see myself living in India. That would be so cool. And then Dubai would be such an experience as well. But I got the call and found out I got the job and that I was going to Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that I was chosen for Toronto because I think it's culturally much more similar. But I think Toronto is such an incredible city. There's such an incredible restaurant scene, food scene. It's so multicultural. I think, yeah, I'm just like absolutely in awe and in love with it. So it's been a year now.
Really? So now I want to ask your favorite, if you have favorite restaurants,
yes.
What's your biggest complaint? Probably, I would imagine traffic would be near the top of the list.
Yeah.
You came at a bad time because like this last spring sucked.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have summer. We didn't have summer until like late June, and it rained all in April and May. You came a bad year for this. Was a horrible spring.
Yeah. Well, I guess.
And then all the Canadians were apologizing to you.
Exactly.
We were all saying sorry.
Yes. Everyone just apologizes.
I'm saying sorry now.
I think the first thing, which was, I guess, a little semi-culture shock, is the weather. It just changes so much every day, and mm-hmm. I've never been used to looking at the weather every day to see what to wear. Because for me, it's just like a constant 27 degrees and sunny, which is really nice back home.
Everyone hates you right now.
Yeah, I know.
No one likes you right now. It's a constant 27 and sunny.
Yeah.
Someone's listening to this podcast and it's February when they're listening to this, and they do not like you.
Well, I mean, first off, it changes so dramatically, the seasons too. It was like the 1st of September and there's already fall leaves out there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So I guess my first almost like pet peeve, I don't know, is the winter was very long.
Yes.
I think the thing that got me was not seeing leaves.
Yeah.
Like I didn't see leaves for 9 months, I think. Like it was from September, maybe 8 months. It was mm-hmm. a long, long. They only started blooming in like mid-May.
You picked a bad year.
I didn't pick it, but.
Yeah, because trust me, we've had years where we've had short winters and good springs.
Yeah.
Hopefully, because you're here for one more year.
Yeah.
Hopefully the next one will be better. What's it like marketing to Canadians? I mean, like, I guess this is your, like, I guess I should say, did you do much of that when you were back home? Because I don't know what you have to compare it with.
So when I was back home, I was working in media and marketing, but a very different style and not in the wine industry. So here, I don't see myself as much marketing. I think what I'm doing right now, it's a bit of a mix of both. It's supporting marketing, it's supporting sales. But when I am doing my events, people are really interested and they get really excited when they see our brands. And I love that, yeah, there's a level of enthusiasm that Canadians really want to learn and that they really want to taste more. And I think with the emerging wine regions here around Toronto and in Canada, they're becoming more credible. Like, I think it's matching Canadians' kind of level of knowledge as well. They want to keep learning and growing. And so overall, they're so polite.
It's a stereotype, but it's true.
Yeah. Like, even I was coming here today. Another thing I love about Toronto is it's so flat. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to get around.
Yes.
So I love using the city bikes, the share bikes.
Yep.
So, I cycled here today. And the T intersection, the rule where you have to wait, like the person who goes first to the T intersection can then proceed through. So, like, I came second to the T intersection and there are all these bikes and they're waiting for me to go. So every time I come to a T intersection, there's always this like hesitant, like, oh no, you go. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No, you go. And literally I rode past and the guy was like, I'm too polite. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's apologizing for being too polite.
Yeah. That I was like, what?
Did they have a Tim Hortons and we're talking about hockey?
I wish. But when it was super snowy and cold this the past winter, it made my day when there were people skiing to work. That was awesome.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah. I'm sorry. For you, like, if people are skiing to work, that means the weather's horrible.
Yeah.
What are the younger demographics like? Because you hear about, first off, millennials. You keep hearing they don't drink as much wine, or it has to be 100% biodynamic, organic, without any trace of chemical. How much of it is truth? How much of it is fiction in terms of the younger demographics and millennials in terms of their taste and habits?
Yeah, so millennials are the biggest wine drinkers now. So they're really leading the trends. Gen Z is coming in, but they've only been drinking wine for a few years now, and we're still trying to figure out what their tastes are. Mm-hmm. We know they like the finer things. Millennials, I mean, the key trends that we're seeing is sparkling, rosé, definitely organic, biodynamic are hot topics, and more kind of stylized modern labels is what we're seeing. Yeah.
And the rosé is definitely one. Like,
yeah,
the rosé 10 years ago, it was just, what? No, that's a sweet red, sweet wine. And then about 5 years ago, it started to, you know, change.
Yeah.
And I think over the last like 3 years or so, like, just rosé is just
pink everything. It's just going crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How important is social? Now, I'm going to ask you a big question. As I ask, I'll pour. What are we going to try next?
So next up, we have our Jacobs Creek Double Barrel Shiraz. Mm-hmm. This is pretty unique because it is aged in both wine and whiskey barrels. So it's something quite innovative that has come out of the winery. The whiskey barrels gives it more of a charred caramel taste. Mm-hmm. So this is a bolder wine, but we like to say it's richer, deeper, and smoother.
Yes.
But definitely a taste of home for me. It's nice. Richer black fruit flavors.
And 2014, so it's had a little bit of time to age.
Yeah, it definitely has. Yeah, this wine is generally aged minimum 2 years.
All right. So what I'll do is I'll clean your glass.
Okay.
And I'm going to pour, but I'm going to ask you just like a big picture question, which I know you can handle for at least 90 seconds before I get back onto the mic.
Okay.
And just because looking at your LinkedIn and bios and stuff like that, just
yes.
You know, you did a lot of work with you know, selling with social media. And I'm wondering just how important is social media to selling wine today? And then the follow-up to that, but I might have the mic back before we get there, is about influencers and the role they play in wine. But we'll start with social media.
So social media is a really interesting one, and it's an ever-evolving beast. I think it's even more, every day is becoming more and more relevant to marketing, to the wine industry. And I've been playing a lot in the social media space in my role. Content is key is what I kind of think. It's a good question. But generally, I think people, millennials are really driving the wine industry at the moment. And the first thing they're doing when they wake up and they go to sleep is looking at their phone. So if you're able to tap into the social media space and really own it, I think in a more of organic way, you're going to get your brand out there and your brand recognized. So that's where influencers definitely come in and are a key role to play. It's very interesting to see where the influencer kind of space will go, but I've definitely worked with a lot of influencers.
Because it's new. It's still new. Fairly new. And
yeah.
It gets part of a bad rap recently. There was the whole Fyre Festival, you know, and then, you know, no one's trusting what Kylie Jenner is doing or just, I think like, I do wonder how much of an, I mean, it must have an impact because people still pay for it.
Yeah.
But I do wonder what impact the influencer can have on the wine world.
Well, what's great is you get really measurable numbers when you're working with influencers and when you're working on social media. It's a cheaper form of advertising and you're able to see the reach, you're able to see the impressions, you're able to see the interactions. And so as a result, you can look at our sales maybe 3 or 6 months later. And I think it definitely does have an impact. As I said, people like social media is definitely people's lives now. They're always on it for,
And it's, you know, like for instance, my rule on this pod is, you know, every now and then someone will send me wine and I'm like, fantastic. If I don't like the wine, I won't review it.
Yeah. Okay.
If I like the wine, I will review it. And I will tell everyone flat out, here's how I came upon the wine or anything like that. And it's not the reason I don't do the negative ones. It's not out of some sort of, oh, I goody two shoes or, hey, it's more, there's a lot of hands that go into making wine. And because I don't like it doesn't mean someone else won't.
Yeah.
The only thing I will do is if a wine, my only criticism is if it doesn't taste like the grape.
Yeah.
If it's not varietally correct, I'll criticize it. If there's too much sugar or it tastes like too much chemical, I will criticize it. There still is a place for sometimes the overly sugary chemical wine because the person who's never tried wine before, maybe they try it, they like it. 6 months later, they try something with less sugar and chemical. 2 years down the road, they're now drinking a bunch of reds. They're not drinking the really manufactured stuff. So that manufactured stuff actually played a positive role. Mm-hmm. So it's always sort of a bit of a give and take. This wine here, this smells like Barossa.
It does.
Like the mint and the eucalyptus is right there.
I mean, it is. It's definitely right there.
Like on a blind taste, like if you were, if like for WSET, like when I did my diploma.
Oh, yeah.
If I had this on my diploma, now I that would be against the rules because don't judge just by smell. Do the full grid.
True.
I would immediately go there. Yeah, it's there. And then, you know, just the, you know, like the dark raspberry, the
very dark fruit flavors.
Yeah.
It's so, you can see how rich it is. You can't even see your finger through the glass.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like this is your, you know, barbecue. This is your steak. Mm-hmm. This is your tomahawk steak wine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely think of barbecues, like charred meats, definitely. Yeah. Bigger, like red meat flavors, an awesome roast. But
you mentioned like the caramel. You get that as you said before that this wine is also aged in whiskey barrel.
Yeah, so
you get that on the finish.
Definitely, we even leave a bit of that Scotch whiskey in the barrel, so you get those flavors come through.
Here's my thought on this wine. First, if you are a Scotch, you know, whiskey drinker, this would be a great wine for you.
Yes.
You know, if you're someone that isn't huge into wine, if you're someone that doesn't like Pinot because it's too light, fair enough.
Yeah.
If you don't like Pinot, this would be a good wine. I'm gonna say about this wine, same thing when I was talking with some of the winemakers from Henry Appellum. I was trying their Bacco Noir because I'm not a big Bacco Noir drinker. And I said, this isn't a wine for me, but this is a well-made wine.
Yeah.
Like what I look for is, does it smell and taste like the land and the grape? Yes, it does. Am I getting an alcohol burn on the back of my throat or neck? I'm not. So like this is like a well-integrated wine.
Yeah.
This wine is doing exactly what it's supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessarily for my palate.
Mm-hmm.
You know how I would treat this wine? People that like action movies.
Yeah.
You know, like the Fast and Furious. Those movies make a ton of money. They're incredibly well made. They're incredibly well executed.
Yeah.
But they're not for everyone.
Yeah.
This is a very well made wine, but it's not going to, you know, it's just not as much for me.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not going to be for a lot of the people listening to this pod. That'd be my thought.
Yeah. Look, I think as I represent so many different wines and brands, you're definitely never going to find a wine that pleases everyone. Everyone has their own tastes. But if you're not a fan of the bigger, bolder wines, then coming out of the Barossa, as I said, you do get, that's more of the style.
Yeah.
But there's some awesome, like Pinot Noirs, as I said, Rieslings, like there's definitely something for everyone within the portfolio or just within, you know, in the wine world. You have your own taste, so.
Yeah.
If
you like, it's one of my expression of mine. If you like everything, you love nothing.
Yeah, true. You know,
because
true.
There's only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
You know, you have to decide, you know.
Definitely. What,
well, you don't have to, but for me, I'd rather love some things.
Yeah.
And other things kind of fall a little bit to the wayside. Hey, we haven't talked about your Spanish portfolio. And
yeah.
I mean, I was recently in Rueda and, you know, spent a bunch of time,
yes,
you know, in that wine growing area in northern Spain. Tell the listeners about about your Spanish portfolio.
So I represent Campo Viejo, which is a winery that lies in Rioja, which is a premium grape growing region in Spain. I love to talk about Campo because it's all about showing the color and expression of the Spanish lifestyle. It's from an all-female winemaking team that we mentioned, which is really, really rare in the old world wine or even in Spain.
By the way, so I interrupt, one of my favorite wine that I tried in Rueda was also an all-female winemaking team.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that there's more and more, all-female winemaking teams there. Yeah, I think I love Campo because it's also carbon neutral. So that's a really big selling point. And it won Spanish Winery of the Year at New York and Berlin International Wine Competition.
And so are these like mostly Rioja-based reds?
Yeah.
Or?
So Campo...
Did I say Rioja-based? I mean Tempranillo, excuse me.
Tempranillo, yes.
Tempranillo-based reds.
Yeah. So as Campo Viejo lies in Rioja, as you would know, Tempranillo is the king grape of that region.
Mm-hmm.
So we specialize in Tempranillo. So the red wines, kind of they're like lighter style, maybe a little bit of spice to it, but definitely cherry notes. So here in Canada, we have the yellow label Tempranillo, which you may have seen, and the orange label Reserva.
And so is the yellow label more Crianza, and then the other one is?
Yes.
So
the yellow label's a Hoven. It's not aged as long, so it's more kind of lighter and fruitier. So if people kind of want that like lighter style, I give them that.
Yep.
But I love the Reserva because it's aged for 18 months in bottle, 18 months in barrel in French and American oak. So it has more of that kind of body and kind of sophistication to it.
How far you did some of the did you do some of the W set? I was looking at
So I'm about to start my W set 3 at George Brown.
Yep. So the advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've done my second one at the first week of my training, the start of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's I think
you'll do like there's the thing with W set is there is such a jump from like the intermediate to the advanced. It's a big jump. And then for the advanced or the diploma, it's a crazy jump.
Yeah.
But the advantage you have is you've traveled all around. You've worked in wine. Like that'll certainly put you, you know, that'll certainly give you a big leg up.
Definitely. I think it'll be a massive advantage. And, I think, whilst you can learn, you can definitely, there's all the knowledge in the world in these books, but when you're hands-on and you're seeing it and you're seeing these wine regions and viticulturalists and winemakers talk about wine and how they do things, that's so invaluable. And I think definitely moments that I won't forget and how they talk about wine as well.
Would you recommend courses like that for people listening who want to just learn more about wine?
100%. Every time I hold an event, I say, like, check out George Brown or IWEG, different schools in the city. I think the W set is an incredible, like, it's so well laid out. It's a great course for people who want to get into wine or already know a bit about wine, just to learn even more.
What are you drinking now?
Like, right now?
No, not right now. right now. I mean, just like in general, because you know how okay. it is. You know, you sort of shift. Like sometimes you're drinking more Gamay, or sometimes yeah. you're drinking more this or like that. Because we're pretty much out of time. We've talked for almost an hour now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
if there's anything you would recommend for people, you know, for people to try.
Yeah.
Which can be tricky for you because obviously, you know, you have your brands from California, Spain, New Zealand, and mm-hmm. Australia. But, mm-hmm. You know, what are you drinking?
So, when I think of this question, it's the start of September, so it's changing seasons. I'm probably shifting to something with a bit more body, like a Pinot Noir, I think kind of suits the season for me. So, I really do love our Stoneleigh Pinot Noir, which mm-hmm. is available in LCBOs. I love going to the different wine bars in the city and just trying new, different, funky things. There's so many cool, like Pet Nuts and, yep. I don't know, organic, natural wines. So I'm never drinking the same thing. I think I'm always striving to kind of learn more and taste something different because with wine, you're never going to know everything. So if you stick to the same wines, I think you could be limiting yourself. So... yeah, always something new. Right now, probably Pinot Noir I could definitely go for.
You know what? That always can go for Pinot. And by the way, that is great advice to always keep trying different things. Mm-hmm. Madeline, really appreciate you joining. Before we go, just promote, where can people find your product, websites, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anything you want to promote for the company?
Definitely. So you can find our products, the two wines we tasted today in the LCBO, in the standard and vintages section. You can find me on social media. I'm Maddie_thewinesnob. Mm-hmm. So you can follow. So that's a bit of fun. And definitely if you're interested in applying for the Wine Ambassador Program, follow us on PR Future Vintage, or you can kind of Google Pernod Ricard Wine Ambassador Program.
Madeline, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, we are on, on Stitcher, Audio Boom, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.